What are you doing? Donald, are there's good news.
It's time again for Donald
Trump.
Theater.
No one knows what is up or down, black or white,
legal
or
impeachable.
Everything is make believe in Donald
Trump.
Theater.
So let's
pull
the
curtain
back.
We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. We can change the focus to a soft blur.
You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
The things that this show has called him, this approach is, I guess it's kind of like we're living in the Twilight Zone.
The prospect of talking about Trump yet again feels exhausting.
I get along with everybody, 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 everybody.
Donald Trump attacked General Motors this morning.
Trump attacking John Lewis on Twitter.
Donald Trump attacking BuzzFeed.
Trump attacked the press.
This Schwarzenegger tweet, is this really from Donald Trump 28 seconds ago?
Donald Trump is taunting Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And Trump this morning going after Meryl Streep.
President Trump attacked Nordstrom.
President Trump attacked the judiciary.
Why is the president picking a fight with Australia?
He attacked the press.
He's attacking the FBI.
Attacking the Freedom Caucus.
Attacking President Obama.
The president picking a fight with Canada.
Trump attacked Blumenthal's military record.
You should never argue with a crazy my.
The president also attacked CNN anchors.
He seems to be attacking the Justice Department.
Attacking Comey.
Attacking one Elizabeth Warren.
Why is he picking a fight with London's mayor right after a terror attack?
The president attacking Rod Rosenstein.
The president on Twitter has attacked CNN, NBC, CBS, ABC, The New York Times, and The Washington Post.
President Trump picking a fight with Jeff Sessions.
He attacked cable host Mika Brzezinski.
Attacking Hillary Clinton.
President Trump has been accused of inciting attacks against journalists.
President Trump attacking Amazon this morning.
Donald Trump attacked Arizona Senator John McCain last night in Arizona.
President also attacking Senator Jeff Flake.
President Trump personally attacked Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
President Trump is attacking the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico.
President Trump attacked the NFL protest.
Attacking Steph Curry this morning.
President Trump has attacked Rex Tillerson.
President Trump attacked the Congresswoman, Frederica Wilson.
The good news from today may have been that the president did not attack a Gold Star widow. He did attack a fellow Republican and the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker of Tennessee.
Meanwhile, President Trump back on Twitter this morning and on the attack.
Attacking Theresa May.
Attacking CNN International.
Attacked Senator Schumer and Congresswoman Pelosi.
He's really picked a fight with LeVar Ball.
I get along with everybody, remember?
You wanna know by now.
Well, Mr. President, I have to say that you're living up to everything I thought you would.
Something this big, something this generational, something this profound could not have been done without exquisite presidential leadership.
This is one of the great privileges of my life, to stand here on the White House lawn with the President of the United States, who I love and appreciate so much.
Thank you, President Trump, for allowing us to have you as our president and to make America great again.
President Donald Trump delivered a great victory for the American people.
Is that all you get for your money? The
exaggeration of having to kiss the ring of Donald Trump, it almost seems like a scene out of The Godfather we just saw, not what you expect from a president of a democracy.
What have I ever done to make you treat me so disrespectfully? And if by chance an honest man like yourself should make enemies, then he would become my enemies. And then they would fear you. Someday, and that day may never come, I'll call upon you to do a service for me.
Every critic, every detractor will have to bow down to President Trump. It's everyone who's ever doubted Donald, whoever disagreed, whoever challenged him. It is the ultimate revenge to become the most powerful man in the universe.
Oh, I haven't heard this kind of sycophancy since I listened to the Nixon tapes, where Henry Kissinger is telling the president what a remarkable human being he is.
I have never heard or seen such outrageous, vicious, distorted reporting in 27 years of public life. I'm not blaming anybody for that. Perhaps what happened is that what we did brought it about. And therefore, the media decided that they would have to take that particular line. But when people are pounded night after night with that kind of frantic, hysterical reporting, it naturally shakes their confidence. And yet, don't get the impression that you arouse my anger.
You see, I have that impression.
You see, one can only be angry with those he respects.
I see many young, bright faces. To them and to many other young Americans watching at home, of which there are many. You see, there's the fake news back there. Look, everybody. Fake news.
Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
No, actually, some of them are fine people. About, let's see, who's back there? Yeah, about 30%.
30%. So Trump likes the press all about as much as America likes Trump.
But shouts of fake news are not just an annoying distraction or a political dog whistle. They are actually dangerous. At least that's what former UK Prime Minister David Cameron is saying. He is blasting the president's rhetoric.
And let me say this. When Donald Trump uses the term fake news to describe the CNN or BBC, that is not just a questionable political tactic. It is actually dangerous. Of course, broadcasters make mistakes, and it's right that they correct them. But what is being attempted here goes far beyond that. It is an attempt to question the whole legitimacy of organizations that do have an important role in our democracies.
The facts support what he's saying there. According to the New York Times, leaders of Syria, Venezuela, Myanmar, and Russia have all used the term fake news to dismiss credible reports and stories that they just disagree with. That includes an Amnesty International report about prison deaths in Syria and claims from an official in Myanmar that the Rohingya Muslims who are being systematically raped and killed are, quote, fake news. Senator John McCain also weighed in yesterday afternoon, retweeting a report from the Committee to Protect Journalists with this comment: Press Freedom's annual report shows record number of journalists imprisoned worldwide in 2017, including 21 on fake news charges. The president must understand his harmful rhetoric only empowers repressive regimes to jail reporters and silence the truth.
From my vantage point here overseas, and I've been following and tracking this ever since the word fake news came out of the president's mouth before he was even inaugurated, we have seen an exponential increase in the harassment, the imprisonment, the assault of journalists all over the world. You just have to look at the statistics that the Committee to Protect Journalists and others who track journalist safety. It really is a problem, whether it's in Russia with Vladimir Putin, whether it's in Turkey with President Erdogan, or in the Philippines with President Duterte, and many other countries.
Even worse, the press coverage he's been getting has been unfairly accurate, which is why he lashed out yesterday, tweeting, "Wow, more than 90% of fake news media coverage of me is negative, with numerous forced retractions of untrue stories, hence my use of social media, the only way to get the truth out. Much of mainstream media has become a joke at Fox and Friends." It is. He's right. It is the only way to get the truth out. Before this tweet, I hadn't even heard of the mainstream media. Hashtag failing Neo York Thomas.
I doubt I'd be here if it weren't for social media, to be honest with you, because there is a fake media out there. I get treated very unfairly by the media, and I have a tremendous platform.
You
so when
worry.
Somebody says something about me, I'm able to go bing, 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 and I take care of it.
Bing, bing, bing.
The
Boston Globe took a deep dive into his 2,400 plus tweets since inauguration. They write, quote, if he spent only 1 minute on each post, that would be nearly 40 hours, a solid work week for most Americans spent just on tweets.
He's actually tweeted more during the final 6 months of this year than the first 6 months of this year, when we thought that his new chief of staff, John Kelly, was really going to rein some of that in and curb his behavior. We've been tracking his tweets at the LA Times as well, and you can sort them by the type of thing, whether it's just, you know, information or watching television or insults. And it's really remarkable how frequently the president is looking backward. He's looking back at the campaign. He's looking back at things people have said to him, people that supported him or didn't support him, rather than looking forward. And of course, at the end of the year, you know, that's sort of where we should all be, is looking forward to 2018.
He rocks in the treetop all the day long, popping and popping and singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' robin, tweet, tweet.
The Boston Globe reports that a third of the president's Twitter activity occurs between 5 and 8 in the morning. How much of that do you think is him trying to set the agenda for the day versus him watching cable TV in the morning?
It's those two things, but it's something else. The staff is not around.
I'm also very concerned. I mean, remember when his account was deleted briefly by a Twitter employee? You know, who has access? Who can somehow get in there and send something out that's going to have dramatic effects? You know, there should be very secure protections on that from the Twitter company perspective. And then also, who has access to it at the White House? We will all remember the moment when he tweeted Covfefe late at night. And that tweet remained up. There was no staff member that came in and said, you know, hey, maybe we should send a second tweet, something like that, for many hours. So that says a lot about the way people work with the president and the power that he commands by holding that device in his hand.
I want to be the machine in your hand.
Trump tweeted this morning, quote, was Fox and Friends just named the most influential show in news? You deserve it. Three great people. Hey, dummy, that show is influential because you believe every word they say and they mostly just read your tweets. That show is basically your Alexa.
It's fake news, a hoax, just a lie perpetuated by losers. That's what President Trump said all year long when it came to questions about Russian interference in the U.S. election and whether any members of his campaign had a hand in it. But guess what? PolitiFact says that's the lie of the year. Yes, the claim that Trump has made over and over again that Russian interference is a made-up story. PolitiFact says that was the biggest whopper of them all.
It was repeated over and over again by President Donald Trump. He would say it as a defense of charges against collusion. This Russian interference definitely happened. And President Trump has said several times that it hasn't.
Do you like Vladimir Putin's comments about you?
Sure. When people call you brilliant, it's always good, especially when the person heads up Russia.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it also is a person that kills journalists, political opponents. Yeah. Obviously, that would be a concern, would it not?
He's running his country. At least he's a leader, you know, unlike what we have in this country.
But again, he kills journalists that don't agree with him.
Well, I think our country does plenty of killing also, Joe. So.
September 2015, Michael Cohen, executive vice president of the Trump Organization, began discussions about a Trump Tower project in Moscow. That same month, Cohen said this as a campaign surrogate.
There's a better than likely chance Trump may even meet with Putin when he comes here for the United Nations. People want to meet Donald Trump.
Your outside counsel intimated that you may have a
meeting with the Russian president.
Well, I had heard that he wanted to meet with me, and certainly I am open to it. I'm not sure. I know that people have been talking.
Cohen told the Washington Post that he discussed the deal three times with the candidate, and that Trump, who led in nearly every poll for the Republican nomination, signed a letter of intent with a Moscow-based developer on October 28, 2015, the night of the GOP's third presidential debate.
I think maybe my greatest weakness is that I trust people too much. I'm too trusting.
In an email on November 3rd, later reported by the New York Times, Trump business associate Felix Sater wrote to Cohen about the Moscow project, quote, I will get Putin on this program and we will get Donald elected. In early December, soon-to-be Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was paid through his speaker's bureau to attend a gala with Putin. Putin later said they hardly spoke.
I didn't even really talk to him. That's the extent of my acquaintance with Mr. Flynn.
Flynn later denied being paid by Russians. January 2016. In an attempt to revive the stalled Trump Tower Moscow project, Michael Cohen sent an email to Putin's personal spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, to ask for help, according to documents later submitted to Congress, reported on by the Washington Post. Peskov later said he got the email, but did not reply. February 29, 2016, Paul Manafort, a career consultant for international strongmen, wrote a memo offering his services, according to the New York Times, in which Manafort offered to work for free. Recent court filings accuse Manafort and Deputy Rick Gates of being tied up in a multi-million dollar money laundering scheme with pro-Russian interests. They have pleaded not guilty. On March 10th, Russian hackers sent phishing emails in an attempt to compromise the inboxes of Democratic Party operatives tied to Hillary Clinton, according to the Associated Press. Within 9 days, they would have access to at least 50,000 emails of campaign chairman John Podesta. In a meeting with the Washington Post on March 21st, Trump announced members of his foreign policy team.
Carter Page, PhD, George Papadopoulos, he's an oil and energy consultant, excellent guy.
That very week, Papadopoulos met in London with a Russian national and a professor with ties to the Kremlin. Volunteer Papadopoulos emailed Trump's national co-chair, Sam Clovis, and several members of the campaign's foreign policy team, telling them he had met with the Russian ambassador and, quote, Putin's niece, who discussed a meeting between Russian leadership and Trump. Clovis replied not to make any commitments and added, great work.
I have nothing to do with Russia. To the best of my knowledge, no person that I deal with does.
At a national security meeting held in the under-construction Trump Hotel in Washington, Papadopoulos told Trump, Jeff Sessions, and others about the meeting. According to advisor J.D. Gordon, Sessions shut down the idea. The president said he doesn't remember.
It's a very unimportant meeting. Took place a long time. Don't remember much about it.
A few weeks later, in late April, the Democratic National Committee's IT department picked up suspicious activity and called in the firm CrowdStrike, discovering a hack that pointed to the Russian government. At the same time, the foreign professor with Kremlin ties told Papadopoulos that he had just returned from Moscow, where he had learned that the Russians had obtained dirt on Hillary Clinton, thousands of emails. Papadopoulos continued the correspondence and attempts to set up a meeting. April 27th, Trump delivered a foreign policy speech at the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C.
Some say the Russians won't be reasonable. I intend to find out.
In the audience, Jeff Sessions, who met with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak at a reception before the speech, an encounter Sessions forgot in sworn testimony.
I did not have communications with the Russians.
Jared Kushner also met with Kislyak at the event, something he would not disclose for more than a year. Reuters later reporting that Kushner had three undisclosed calls with Kislyak from April through the general election in November. In May, Kushner received a message from the deputy head of Russia's central bank, Alexander Torshin, seeking a meeting and hinting that he had a message from Putin. Kushner declined, yet Donald Trump Jr. met with Torshin on the sidelines of an NRA event. Shortly after, Donald Trump Jr. met with a senior Russian bank official, Rob Goldstone, a British music publicist who worked with the Trump family on the 2013 Miss Universe pageant, emailed Trump Jr. on June 3rd about a back channel to the Kremlin. Kremlin, writing that Aris Agalarov, a Russian oligarch Goldstone worked for, had met with a Moscow-based lawyer, Natalia Veselnitskaya, who he said had some official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia, part of Russia and its government's support for Mr. Trump. Trump Jr. replied, "If it's what you say, I love it, especially later in the summer," and set up the meeting. 4 days later, candidate Trump made this promise.
"I am going to give a major speech on probably Monday of next week, and we're going to be discussing all of the things that have taken place with the Clintons."
On June 8th, Trump Jr. forwarded the email to Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort. And on June 9th, the trio met with Veselnitskaya, Renat Akhmetshin, a Russian lobbyist and former Soviet counterintelligence sergeant, Ike Kavaladze, who worked for the Russian billionaire Agalarov and was a subject of a federal report on foreign money moving through U.S. banks, and a Russian translator. But weeks later, Trump Jr. denied any whiff of assistance from Moscow.
"What's happening with the Russians? It's disgusting. It's so phony."
Trump Jr. would later have several explanations of the meeting, but continues to insist nothing of consequence came from it. Just hours after the Russians left Trump Tower, Trump Sr. responded to a Clinton tweet writing, "Where are your 33,000 emails that you deleted?" On June 12th, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange said he might know.
"We have upcoming leaks in relation to Hillary Clinton, which is great."
Meanwhile, Jared Kushner took over the campaign's data operation in June, according to an interview with Forbes. It said Kushner gained access to the RNC's voter file and soon brought in the firm Cambridge Analytica to target voters. And according to the Wall Street Journal, that same month, the CEO of Cambridge Analytica emailed WikiLeaks, offering their help to organize and disseminate Clinton-related emails. But Assange said no. This, as the first batch of hacked DNC documents were leaked on June 15th by a hacker called Guccifer 2.0, who U.S. intelligence later determined was a tool of the Russian military. June 19th, Trump foreign policy advisor Carter Page, who later attended the RNC, said he sent an email to top campaign aides Corey Lewandowski and Hope Hicks, as well as foreign policy advisors J.D. Gordon and Sam Clovis, to say he was headed to Moscow. Page later said he mentioned the trip to Jeff Sessions, though Sessions apparently forgot.
"I'm not aware of any of those activities."
And he also forgot another meeting he had with Sergei Kislyak in July.
"And I didn't have communications with the Russians."
After Page delivered his speech in Moscow on July 7th, he spoke with Russia's deputy prime minister and reported it back to the campaign. Also on July 7th, Paul Manafort, then Trump campaign chairman, sent an email to an intermediary of Russian billionaire Oleg Deripaska, a Kremlin ally, offering private briefings on the campaign, according to the Washington Post. The offer was kept secret.
"Are there any ties between Mr. Trump, you or your campaign, and Putin and his regime?"
"No, there are not. It's absurd."
All this as the Republican National Convention softened the party platform's position on arming Ukraine against Russian aggression. And the start of the Democratic Convention was marred by WikiLeaks' release of thousands of stolen DNC emails that showed party officials' opposition to Bernie Sanders during the primary fight. But Trump brushed off suspected foreign involvement.
"Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press."
August, in multiple interviews, Trump confidant Roger Stone claimed to have a back channel to WikiLeaks while privately communicating with another hacker. On August 21st, Stone tweeted a promise. It will soon be Podesta's time in the barrel, and made this assertion days later.
"I'm almost confident that Mr. Assange has virtually every one of the emails that the Clinton henchwomen thought that they had deleted.
A week after Manafort was ousted from the Trump campaign over reports about secret payments from Ukraine, replaced by Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway at the urging of Trump mega donor Rebecca Mercer, Mercer asked the CEO of her family's data firm, Cambridge Analytica, working for the Trump campaign, to reach out to WikiLeaks to help organize the Clinton emails it was releasing. WikiLeaks turned them down. The CIA told members of Congress about Russian interference late in the summer, and Trump received a counterintelligence briefing with an explicit warning. If foreign actors like the Russians try to infiltrate your campaign, tell the FBI. But Trump continued to cast doubt.
Putin recently said that the hacking of the Democratic National Committee's emails was a public service. You agree?
I don't have any opinion on it. I don't know anything about it. I don't know who hacked. I'm not sure who. I mean, you tell me who hacked.
September 8th, Jeff Sessions had yet another meeting with the Russian ambassador that he forgot.
And I didn't have communications with the Russians.
On September 20th, WikiLeaks contacted Donald Trump Jr. with the password of an anti-Trump website. Hours later, Trump Jr. responded and then, according to The Atlantic, relayed the message to senior members of the Trump campaign, including Bannon, Conway, digital director Brad Parscale, and Kushner, who reportedly forwarded it to Hope Hicks. October 1st, Roger Stone tweeted, Wednesday, Hillary Clinton is done, with the hashtag WikiLeaks.
I have a back channel communications with WikiLeaks, but they certainly don't clear or tell me in advance what they're going to do.
2 days later, Trump Jr. asked WikiLeaks, what's behind this Wednesday leak I keep reading about? There was no response. On October 7th, as Trump came under fire for the Access Hollywood tape,
grab him by the
WikiLeaks released the first batch of Podesta's emails. The same day that U.S. intelligence said WikiLeaks disclosures were consistent with Russian-directed efforts. But nevertheless, Trump praised them.
WikiLeaks! I love WikiLeaks!
On October 12th, WikiLeaks urged Trump Jr. to share a link to spread their stories. 15 minutes later, candidate Trump sent a tweet about the little pickup by the dishonest media of WikiLeaks' incredible information.
Yeah. I am not quoting
myself.
No
idea.
I am quoting
Hillary, you
17.
Have no idea.
17 intelligence. Do you doubt 17
our
military
country has
and
no
civilian.
Idea.
According to an NBC News count, today marked his 111th day at a Trump property as president. That's 111 days of a 341-day administration.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.